And a lot of my role as a monetization leader who's worked in product organizations is to be able to effectively have a conversation with the leadership team across both product and all of our business teams on how we want to exercise these levers, but also preserve the user value. Like, I view myself as saying, okay, you know, I'm the product leader in this area. I need to really understand, you know, the user value that we're providing in exchange for viewing these ads. And then, you know, when we are approached from, you know, the CFO at the end of a quarter to be able to hit a short-term business goal, I can lay out, you know, if we pull this lever, this is what will happen from a user perspective.
Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Vassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hello and welcome to a new episode. I'm really happy because I'm with Megan Hughes, who I will ask you to introduce yourself in a second, but we will talk about monetization, which is a topic close to my heart, how monetization connects to strategy. So really, really glad that we are doing it. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Maybe to get started and to get to know you a bit better, can you tell us a bit more about yourself and what's your background and what you have been doing lately?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Megan, and I've been leading product teams and creating products for the last 15 years. I've worked across a lot of industries, mostly focused on the B2C space. You know, starting my career working at Orbit in the travel space. I worked at Betterment in the investing space, an early stage fashion startup. And then my most recent experience, I've led monetization teams at both Chegg and at Affirm. And kind of the interesting part about all of these is that, you know, these businesses span e-commerce, marketplaces, also subscription businesses. But the big tie-in that I've had across all of these different business models has really been that most of my roles have had, you know, some tie-in to monetization. You know, even when I've been working on a purely consumer side, you know, like at Orbitz, I've had some tie-in to working, you know, on the ad strategy, and, you know, sometimes we call it marketing technology or ads, but, you know, all kind of really related to the monetization side of it. So thought it would be interesting to, you know, share some of the insight that I've had over the years of creating these different monetization strategies. And, you know, like I mentioned, I've always worked on consumer side. That's where my role has sat. But with monetization, there's also a focus on the B2B side, particularly in like a marketplace business, because you're trying to understand who the suppliers are or the merchants are that you're working with and create solutions for them to be able to utilize your platform. So it's kind of a unique intersection of both the B2C consumer side, but also really understanding, you know, how to utilize suppliers or merchants in your network to increase monetization. What I'm doing now, I'm currently on the hunt for my next role. So, you know, looking to lead a product team or a monetization team, you know, been doing some advising now for smaller companies, but open to taking on, you know, additional advising clients if folks are interested in, you know, learning more about monetization. And, you know, for me, I really enjoy the process of building and growing teams and creating those strategies that kind of pull together business value with, you know, what we're actually trying to build for customers. So,
I love that framing because as we discussed in our preparation talk, this sort of a taboo topic sometimes, the ads and how the ads interfere in the user experience. So I'm glad that we will probably uncover some of that, which leads me to my initial question that maybe we can start exploring from there, which typically is what was your maybe going through the process, the last time you had to create a strategy, what were the steps you take, some maybe frameworks or tools you use, and maybe walking us through that process.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as I was thinking about kind of which example to talk through of the different, you know, times that I've been through this, I think the one of the most interesting examples is to talk about creating the monetization strategy at Chegg. And, it, you know, just in case folks aren't familiar, Chegg is an education tech company, started out providing textbooks, so just like straight e-commerce, but then, you know, many years ago moved into digital services for students. So creating, you know, tools that help with solving math problems or tutoring or writing or other homework help. And those are all packaged together in a subscription, monthly subscription package. And so, you know, working on monetization at Chegg was a complex problem because we had the existing subscription business. We also had some products that were available for free that gave us an opportunity to explore ads monetization. And so there's just a lot of room to really experiment and understand kind of how to find that optimal balance of, you know, customer value and business value. So, you know, that's kind of what I'll talk about. And starting out, I would say that, like, you know, when I think about the steps for a monetization strategy, I think the very, very first step, which is probably a first step in like a lot of product problems, is understanding the customers. And so I think that there's, you know, like I mentioned kind of in the intro, most of the time my role on the monetization team has been sitting within a B2C team. So, you know, you might think that, like, you know, in the example of Chegg, the customer is the student. And I think that's like, you know, one possible thing, but then we also have to think about, from a monetization perspective, who are the customers when we think about, like, you know, suppliers and partners and advertisers. And like in the example of Chegg, it might even be universities that are interested in kind of tapping into our student population. You know, to give you another example, on the Orbit side, when I worked there, you know, most of the time we said, like, our customer is the traveler, but it's also thinking about our customer as, you know, it's the hotels that are advertising, you know, that are available on Orbitz. It's the car rental companies. It's the tourism boards. It's, you know, the tourism board of Spain that wants to bring more visitors into the country. And so they have advertising budgets that they want to tap into. And so, you know, it's really thinking about who those audiences are that might, you know, have a good overlap. And so, you know, that's kind of the first step, is really thinking creatively about who the customers are, you know.
I have maybe a question to that. I won't interrupt the flow too much, but there's just a thought around thinking about your sitting in a B2C team in which you are kind of considering the student, but in this monetization mindset, you are not really thinking about adding value to that user. You're saying, hey, we need to show you, I'm just exaggerating here, but we need to show you ads to make this viable, but there's probably no value to you there. Is this the right way to go about it? How do you feel about it?
So I don't know if it's exactly the right way to think about it. So when I think about kind of the monetization strategy, like, the student is still a key portion of the strategy, because I think in addition to just ads, you know, we also had a subscription product. So we were thinking about, how do we add value to the more premium product? You know, do we have the opportunity to actually create a lower price tier that has less features that, you know, a certain segment of students use? And so really understanding kind of what they were willing to pay for helped us, you know, put the strategy together. And so, you know, as I think about it really broadly, like, when in this notion of, like, ads are bad, and, you know, we didn't really think about it that way. We basically thought about it as, like, you know, what we understand about the Chegg student, and, you know, it is slightly unique because they are students, is that they're really price sensitive. You know, our product was inexpensive to begin with, but, like, you know, they're students, they don't have a lot of resources and money. And you know, one of our goals from a company perspective was really to expand access. So how do we give more students access to our tools because they need it and they don't have access to these tools and resources through their university today, or it's hard to come up with. And so, you know, our thought process on introducing ads was really about how do we solve these problems? Like, can we create a lower cost product that makes sense for our overall business economics that's subsidized with ads? Can we create a free product that gives access to more students that's subsidized with ads? And so that's the way that we really thought about it when we thought about the student perspective is, you know, knowing what we know about our demographic and the characteristics of, you know, their pain points. And part of their pain point is that it's expensive to go to college. You know, how can we actually utilize our monetization strategy, both in creating different subscription products, but also utilizing advertising to create that product for them at a price they're willing to pay?
Yeah, I see what you mean. So essentially is I was simplifying my terms, the core product might be delivering the value. And what we are doing here is finding a way to deliver that value in a way that is free or inexpensive.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or just kind of optimizing that balance of, like, you know, looking at those users and really understanding kind of what, you know, how can we make the subscription as valuable as possible for that set of students? And then if there's people that are so price sensitive that they're never going to subscribe, but they have a high need, you know, how can we create some subset of the product that's available for them or gives them a taste of, you know, what they could be getting in the subscription product?
Yeah, yeah. So going back in time to put us back in track. So we said we need to start with the customer. We have the customer as a student, and we have, but also keeping an eye on the customer as the supplier of these ads.
Absolutely.
Where do we go from there?
Yeah. So, you know, customers is the first step, but we kind of got into it a little bit. But now, you know, the second step is really thinking about business goal alignment and really thinking about how we understand what's important to the particular business. And so, you know, a couple things to think about in this sense is, you know, understanding how the leadership team thinks about short-term and long-term trade-offs. You know, I've worked at companies where, you know, user growth or, you know, new user acquisition is the most important metric. And, you know, these might be public companies, but often they're private companies or, you know, venture-backed startups where the metric that you're really trying to show is number of new users that you can get interested in your platform versus, you know, in a public company setting, those quarterly revenue numbers might be more important. So I think, you know, part of, you know, creating a really good strategy that will allow a lot of different, you know, conversations between leadership teams and product teams is really understanding what is important to drive the business. And so at Chegg, it's a public company and, you know, publicly reported, you know, revenue projections. And so revenue was a big target for us, particularly revenue per user, because, you know, Chegg has been around for many years and has a fairly high penetration for US-based college students. So, you know, I won't necessarily talk too much about it in the context of monetization strategy, but international growth is also, you know, a strategic pillar. But from a monetization perspective, you know, the penetration and awareness within US-based college students was already fairly high. And so, you know, when we think about what are our goals from a business perspective, it's really looking at how do we increase revenue per user. And so, you know, we had a lot of students that were coming to the site, but then choosing not to subscribe. So is there a way for us to create an experience? This is what we were kind of talking about before. Like, can we create an experience or a lower cost bundle that we can subsidize with ads so we can get those students engaged with the product and actually increase the revenue per user for those students, but also give them value in exchange? And that's the big thing. When I talk about monetization, I always talk about thinking about the value exchange opportunities, because, you know, it's really important not only to explain to the rest of the organization, like, why monetization is important, but, you know, sometimes even to your customers, like, what is that value exchange? And so a really good example that I like to use about the value exchange is when you have to watch an ad at the beginning of a video in order to unlock the content of that video. Very common, you know, very common monetization strategy. You really understand that, like, I am watching this ad to unlock this content. And so, you know, I, you know, use that as an example, but it's really just like thinking about what the value exchange opportunities are. And then, you know, we'll get into this in a little bit. We ran tons of surveys and all of this stuff, and users really understand, like, that is what I have to do. And you have to explain to them, you know, you watch this ad and you get to unlock this content that you really want to see. So, yeah, so I think that's kind of a piece of it, but really thinking about these value exchange opportunities, and then what are the valuable assets that my product already has? Do I have a ton of free traffic that's not converting? You know, all of those types of things. And then, you know, also thinking about potential value outside of, like, you know, this feature drives people to sign up, like this feature drives a lot of acquisitions, or it drives a lot of sharing, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, what are the actual value that these features are providing both to our students and to our business? So I think that is kind of like part of what I like to lay out, looking at the existing product suite.
Yeah, I have an interesting question to that, because this might be a bit tricky, but I see a very interesting difference between what you just mentioned, kind of the video thing, or what Chegg might provide to students, versus, for example, the travel company, the Orbitz example. I've been working in travel for a while. So there, the value exchange is not that visible. I mean, it's not that we are, you might say, I'm investing this money to provide better discounts, but the connection for the user seeing the ad is not so visible. So do you have any framework for that?
Totally, yeah. And I think that was actually a really, you know, a really interesting challenge for us. And, you know, so in the travel example, you know, discounts are a good one. That's what we worked on. So we had a lot of, you know, I worked at one point in the car rental, acquisition path. And we just had, you know, display advertising around, you know, the search results that were advertising the different car companies that were present in the search results. And so, you know, one of the things that we thought about is, okay, what if we didn't do just display advertising? What if we went to these advertising partners and asked for, you know, exclusive discounts for mobile only? So they would have, you know, the ability to kind of drive new customers, but they were giving some of that value back. And so, you know, I think that's an interesting way to think about it, is like, can I utilize what the advertisers are willing to pay to give value back to the customers? And so I think that's an interesting one for marketplace-based businesses, which is like Orbitz and even at Affirm, that's what we were looking at, is saying, okay, and, you know, for listeners who might be unfamiliar with Affirm, it's a company that provides buy now, pay later loans. And so, you know, one of the things that we looked at there when we thought about value exchange opportunities is if we had a merchant who was willing to pay more money to have their, you know, their brand highlighted within the Orbitz app, why, instead of just having them, you know, in the first position or, you know, takeover of the homepage, let's actually have them providing a discount back to, the customers. So they're participating in a, you know, they're spending their advertising dollars to be able to give value back to the customers. And that will kind of drive the behavior that they're looking for.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Then if I, going back to our track, we discussed that we need to understand the customer, we need to understand the business goals, and we need to understand this value that we need to provide. How will you... Because for the user, for the business goal, that's pretty straightforward. But when you are collecting these value exchanges or this potential value proposition, how are you collecting that? Where is it landing? Is something that you are collecting, I don't know, document, mirror board, or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, most of the time, you know, I'm working off of some type of, like, monetization strategy document. And, you know, part of the like initial setup is really laying out what are all the features that we have available. So what we did at Chegg, and this was in kind of like a spreadsheet format, is we laid out, okay, what is every single feature that we have available? What is like the unit of measurement that we are doing? So for example, for math problems, like it's number of math problems that they're solving. For writing, it was like number of papers that we're checking. And so we were able to kind of go through and look at that and say, okay, if we gave away, one free math problem or three free math problems, you know, what do we think that would do? And so we were able to kind of look across all of these different products to understand what package we wanted to put them in versus where we wanted to give them away for free. And then we also were able to put in there for each of the different parts of the package, you know, what does the competitive landscape look like? What is the alternative that a student has? So, you know, for writing, they have Google Docs that they can use, or they have, you know, they could go to their school writing center and that's free, and Google Docs is free. So we were kind of identifying that like a lot of the features that we have within our writing product, there are high quality free alternatives that already exist. So that might raise a flag for us that says this is something we should highly consider to make part of our free product, our ad subsidized free product, because there's a lot of free alternatives that already exist in the market. So we laid out a huge spreadsheet of all the different pieces. That also helped us when it came to survey time, because we knew, you know, what are the parts we wanted to put together into, various surveys. That was kind of our format to get all of the possible opportunities laid out.
Okay. Then what's next after we have very long map?
Yes. So, okay. The next thing is thinking about like, what are those options that we might have? And so we've talked a little bit about freemium and expanding our existing offering, but I think, you know, in an existing subscription product, like, you know, the first place to start is to say, okay, is our existing subscription product optimized? Do we need to add in an additional tier? In the case of Chegg, we had two tiers. We had a base product, and then we had a more premium offering that kind of bundled together a few of the products. What we were exploring was, should we do a lower priced tier? And part of that exploration was really coming from that initial customer research that we did, that we knew that the reason that a lot of customers weren't subscribing was because they're price sensitive. It's not because it was missing all the features in the premium tier, is because, you know, they didn't want to pay that much. So that was why we started exploring a lower priced tier. But I think this, you know, the first place to start on monetization is thinking about the existing offering and how do we optimize it. Another thing I haven't quite mentioned is around looking at the cost of the unit economics, the cost of creating these. So a couple of things that we did explore in the Chegg monetization strategy was, how do we make the premium tier more attractive? What are features that we could build? And so, you know, I worked at Chegg for over 3 years. So this is over a long period of time. This is not something that we did like, you know, right off of the bat, but we introduced a product for expert writing help. So a human would actually read through your paper and give you a rubric of, a rubric of how you did. And this was a feature we envisioned adding to the premium tier. And so, you know, that had a cost associated with it. So we really had to understand the unit economics of providing this service. So when we were testing it, we could understand, can we afford to offer this at the price point that we're thinking of offering it at? So that is a good piece also. And when we're talking about unit economics, there's the direct cost of like the student paying for the service, but there's also things that you can think about. Does this feature, if I'm creating a feature that has a cost associated with it, does it drive initial signups? Does it drive retention? Does it drive LTV? Like, there's other ways to kind of look at unit economics, but I think it's definitely part of that equation.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think that's one step. And then there's additional subscription tiers, but there's also add-on products. And so, yeah, you know, this is where you might have a new product coming, or, you know, something that's part of your existing subscription tiers. And you might decide, instead of offering a new subscription tier, we'll just offer this as an add-on service that you can purchase, you know, ad hoc. So in the example of Chegg with the writing help, one of the things we explored is maybe people don't want unlimited help as a part of their, you know, unlimited help as a part of their package, but maybe they would want to pay for one, you know, expert check as part of, you know, in addition to the subscription that they currently have. So, you know, we were looking at ways to kind of explore one-off, like ad hoc add-on services, yeah, in addition to full subscription offerings, based on some of the insight that we were gathering from our research that we were doing.
Yeah, interesting.
One other thing to mention that was a big driver for how we set everything up was the technical limitations that we had. And so I'm talking about creating a strategy, but I think in order to really make the like execution of the strategy work is understanding the technical limitations of how the system is set up. And so within the Chegg framework, we didn't have a lot of flexibility in the SKUs that we were able to offer based on the way that it was technically architected. And we had a lot of plans to change the way that it was technically architected to make it more flexible. But it, you know, for us, it may have made sense to do an add-on product in order to test out how products were being used, because that was technically easier for us to build versus creating a new premium tier with an additional SKU. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a big thing just for, you know, folks listening when you're thinking about it, is like talk to engineering and make sure you understand how the, you know, architecture of the system and how SKUs work, because this becomes very, very complicated quickly when you're trying to do a lot of different testing. And so, you know, I mention it now because as you're thinking about, you know, creating all these ideas, like, you know, understanding what's possible will help with the execution of the strategy as well.
Yeah. Actually, I've been both sides to cost of deploying, right? So probably everything is doing from a technical perspective, but the cost to do that, if it requires a lot of free architecture, probably will be super high.
Yes. Yeah.
I have one maybe small question before going to bigger questions. Is in this type of product that is value per usage, why do you believe, and this is kind of probably not going even to strategy, but I think we get too used to subscriptions. And my question goes along the line, haven't we overdone subscriptions? Maybe someone needs to pay, hey, I don't know, $1 per each math problem or whatever, just making this up, but kind of making more of a consume slash value exchange sort of equation for users?
So we evaluated a lot of those consumption-based models. And so when we were looking at the data around who the customers are that are currently using the product, we looked at so many different slices of it, like, okay, for the people that have been subscribers for this many months, what type of content are they consuming? How much of it are they consuming? What is the frequency? And so oftentimes, once people really got to you know, the point of becoming a subscriber, they were consuming so much content that, mm-hmm, you know, it just would make sense for them to have that more unlimited subscription. But you know, it was definitely something that we evaluated, particularly when we were evaluating, should we create a lower cost bundle? And we looked at that and said, okay, are there a subset of people that are, you know, they only want access to 5 math problems because that's all they need. They don't have this, you know, ongoing need. You know, could we create, you know, a $1 a month, you know, package for them, or allow them to kind of do, you know, ad hoc to buy these different options. So it was definitely something we explored and modeled out. It was not something we tested while I was there, but I do think that it's still, you know, potentially an opportunity. I haven't connected with that team in a little while, but, you know, potentially still an opportunity to explore these different ways of consuming the content so that, you know, you're finding that optimal point of, you know, getting the value to the students while still, you know, being able to kind of capture that for the business.
Yeah, I get this feeling that when I was saying about we over the subscriptions that at some point in time we used to kind of buy software in boxes and then everything moved to subscription and seems that this is the default now. And yeah, that's what I'm trying to say, but it makes sense what you're saying.
Yeah. I think it's also one of the things that's interesting to think about with subscriptions, and you see this a little bit with Netflix, is that when you have like super high market penetration, you run out of options very quickly when it comes to subscription. Like your options are creating more tiers, which we saw with Netflix. They've created additional, you know, packages for more devices and that kind of stuff. You know, introducing ads into the model. You know, they've kicked off account sharing, which is also a big thing for, you know, subscription businesses, but you like run out of options. And then all you do is you raise price because that's your revenue lever as a public company. And so I think, you know, there's an element of like, how do we understand that a little bit better and then think about long-term in the future, what, you know, what is that long-term value? And then how do we show growth in the business, you know, through international expansion or other things like that?
Okay, then I will throw the big question at you. This is the thought I've been having through your description of the strategy. At what level the decisions we are making are strategic and at what level become tactical? Because there are so many things above among testing and trying new things and these bundle things. But I did, so maybe the question is this just kind of the strategy is growth the revenue, or is there some sort of paths that you would say, hey, these are the strategic decisions, and then we have the tactics?
Yeah, I think, you know, with monetization, as someone who's worked on it for a long time, like it's very tempting and very easy to show wins with just tactics. Like, you know, if you already have an ad footprint, you can increase the refresh rate of your ads and you can double your revenue if you people stay on the site for the same amount of time. Or you can add another ad or a longer, you know, video unlock ad. So it's very easy to do those things and it's very tempting to do those things. And a lot of my role as a monetization leader who's worked in product organizations is to be able to effectively have a conversation with the leadership team across both product and all of our business teams on how we want to exercise these levers, but also preserve the user value. Like I view myself as saying, okay, you know, I'm the product leader in this area. I need to really understand, you know, the user value that we're providing in exchange for viewing these ads. And then, you know, when we are approached from, you know, the CFO at the end of a quarter to be able to hit a short-term business goal, I can lay out, you know, if we pull this lever, this is what will happen from a user perspective. And so, you know, I think that it's a really interesting, you know, it's a really interesting place to be kind of in the middle of, because it's very easy to kind of be the hero of the story, but you know, you really want to make sure that you're thinking about those long-term things. And so one of the things that we did at Chegg, was we set up a lot of tests where during times when it wasn't like a super crunch time or like the really, really busy time where we wanted to capitalize on everything, where we actually ran tests where we removed all the ads and then we added in, you know, one ad at a time. We did that for baseline data. So we would be able to say when we have no ads, here's the behavior that we see. And we were able to find kind of the looking at our user metrics, like what is the user tolerance for these things? So when we were approached from, you know, the leadership team about, you know, employing a tactic or a lever, we could more accurately say, okay, we think that if we do this, we might have an impact on conversion rate because we've run these tests before, and that will have an impact on our longer term metrics. Because if these people aren't converting now, they're not going to be part of our retention numbers and all of this. So we were able to kind of paint those pictures so we could make the decisions. And I, you know, I won't pretend to say that I've never made a decision that you know, has you know, gone against, you know, maybe or a short-term lever that we needed to meet the business, because I have done that. But it's more that we have the information to be able to make that decision with our eyes wide open, as opposed to just saying, we're going to try it and it might have a bad impact on users and we don't know what that will be.
Yeah, knowing the trade-off. So I have two questions related to that. The first one is a bit more specific, following the same line. Would you say that there are kind of, when deciding the monetization strategy, because we were saying before, hey, we have all these options, the strategic decision is what path to follow. For example, as you were saying, we will try to add this free tire and we will kind of add test the ad monetization, whatnot, but then all the tactics is up for the execution. Is this a sort of strategic, or the add-ons, for example?
Yes.
This is what we'll call, okay.
Yeah. So now, like, you know, what I've talked about is kind of how do we evaluate all of these things? And then it's really coming up with, like, what is the game plan for how we move forward? And I would say that monetization is a bit of like an ongoing optimization problem. So it's, I wouldn't ever say that we're considering it done ever. Like, it's a long ongoing optimization problem. So it's really about thinking, like, the strategy is like, what is that roadmap of items that we want to go after? And so, you know, like I've mentioned with Chegg, really where we decided to focus our strategy was on creating the freemium tier and optimizing what was in that freemium tier. And, you know, a couple reasons for that. The first one was around the students and, like I mentioned, their, you know, price sensitivity. And we knew we had a lot of students that were coming to the site but weren't choosing to subscribe. So, you know, really investigating that group of people and saying, you know, how could we get them access to understanding what the product is about? And then, you know, creating that freemium tier that's, you know, ad supported allows us to have, you know, multiple revenue streams and allows us to monetize the free traffic that's already coming to the site and choosing not to convert. So when I talk about kind of creating the strategy, that was part of it. I think we had other tests that were looking at the other things, like, okay, if we create, you know, if we created more products, could we raise the price? Like, we had a lot of these other tactics, and then it's really just putting them in order of what we wanted to execute against first.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's a never-ending game of always optimizing monetization, and then you decide what to bet on in terms of making this monetization possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe, so the second question I had in mind while we were discussing the previous topic is, I would call it alignment, for lack of a better word, but it's even a bit deeper because it's not the typical alignment with stakeholders. What I'm saying is because there is a lot of business analysis and projections and financial modeling going on. And also, I'm not sure how this play at Chegg or other companies or what you have seen in your experience, but I will say that not every product leader may be empowered to say, we will add a new subscription tier. That's maybe a decision either taken elsewhere or taken for a group of people. So what's your experience with that?
Yeah, so in my role at Chegg as the leader of monetization, so my team was very cross-functional. So I had product managers, product marketing, actually programmatic ad team, user research. So we had a lot of, like, within our team, we had a lot of those, like, cross-functional teams that we needed to get alignment with. But we also worked really closely with, like, business strategy teams, you know, analytics, business operations, market research. We did, like, conjoint analysis and, you know, some broader surveys. But I think, you know, that is you know, a really good point of, like, you know, part of it is understanding where those decisions get made. So, you know, does the leadership team get together and say, we want to add a freemium offering, or we want to, you know, add an additional higher price tier? You know, how do those decisions get made? And then as a product leader, how do you help evaluate if that's a good decision? Because a lot of times there are things that come down from a leadership team that are ideas. And as a product leader, you know, we want to take those ideas and understand the context and decision making that went behind it, but also potentially paint other options if we think that there's things mm-hmm. that might also accomplish those goals. And so, you know, starting really you know, starting with like, what are the goals? And then what is the context that went into some of these decisions can help with, you know, really structuring from a product perspective, like, what does this look like? And, you know, I definitely always have very strong partnership with analytics or, you know, business strategy to be able to do a lot of that financial modeling to say, if we create this, you know, if we raise the price by a dollar, you know, we might see less signups and less retention, but here we're going to see more revenue. And so we do that modeling together so that when we have these ideas, we get a good sense for, you know, how the impact that it might have both short term and long term.
Yeah, that's interesting because at the end of the day, it's it's a partnership and it's about being able to show the trade-offs because sometimes, as you said, maybe it's a top-down decision. Hey, we need to increase revenue, so we need to add another dollar to the subscription. Yeah. But then understanding the trade-off and what you are sacrificing in the long term is the non-naive way to go about it.
Yeah, and I think like that's the way that I kind of always approach it is that, you know, my job is to kind of like understand all of those different pieces. And like, if we make this decision, what are the potential long-term impacts, you know, and putting on that customer hat and saying, you know, here's what it will impact from a customer perspective. And this is what the long-term impact might be to, you know, LTV, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I mentioned that we were running these tests where we took all of the ads off of the Chegg site, you know, to get a baseline number. And we were looking at, you know, time on site, how often did they come back? You know, we actually ran cohorts for long periods of time so we could look at those like longer term user metrics. Because one of our thoughts that we had was like, you know, if customers are seeing ads, they're just going to get tired of it and they're not going to come back. And so we really wanted to look at cohorts of students over a long period of time to say, was that true? Did they come back? Or was this such a turnoff that they left and they went and found something else? So we wanted to make sure that we were running those tests so we would have that information for us to create these strategies.
Yeah, that's super powerful. Okay. I want to get ahead because we went through all the strategy, I would say all the strategy process. We lay out the options. We briefly go through how to decide. Going into what you're saying, maybe creating a roadmap or a sequence of testing. So what are the artifacts you use? Maybe a check in terms of, yes, we put it in a roadmap. And if you use a roadmap, what was the level of the items in the roadmap? Was it very specific to the tactic level or more like, hey, we will, you know, test freemium and it was a big bucket of, a big chunk of time.
Yeah. So I typically, when we were creating strategies for certain points of time, usually like 6 months at a time, sometimes even a year, there was some themes. So, you know, is this quarter about freemium? Is this quarter about, you know, creating a new tier, all of those. So we would create some high level themes, but then the roadmap itself is quite tactical. And within monetization, we had a really strong culture of A/B testing and, you know, using both a combination of A/B testing, so real tests that we were running in the field on different price points or different ad layouts, in addition to some like painted door testing. So, you know, can we spin up a landing page or a button within the site that someone can click on to be able to gain interest in, you know, potentially a new feature that we haven't yet built? And so we were really trying to get as much data as we possibly could behind some of our hypotheses. But it, you know, one of the things that I haven't quite mentioned, but is really important here is that within monetization, you have so many touch points with all of the other teams in the organization.
I was going to ask exactly that, dependencies, a big topic.
So my team, you know, monetization at Chegg, but we were touching, you know, there's a whole team that's building the math product and building the writing product and building all of these different products. And so we have to be constantly communicating with them around what our strategy is, understanding from their side, hey, are you building a new feature that might be a good thing to put into the premium tier? Or it might be some, you know, it might be something we want to include in the free tier because we think it's going to drive, you know, new signups. And so we really had to have a ton of, you know, communication and, you know, alignment with those teams. Also, if I'm proposing that I want to put an ad onto someone else's product surface, that's a really tough discussion to have. So I really, you know, one of the really, really important things is being able to explain this value exchange trade-off, being able to explain that we have a bunch of students that can't afford to subscribe to the product, you know, the existing product we have. So we want to create this premium offering, and this is how we expand access. And yeah. And it goes down to, you know, not just the product managers, but making sure that we're having those conversations, you know, broadly across the entire organization so that it's clear of what we're trying to do. And then we're also being really clear on what our evaluation criteria is and how we are looking, you know, both at those consumer metrics. So how does it impact how the consumer engagement mm-hmm. is on that particular product, but what is the revenue we're looking at and what is our, you know, trade-off points and those kind of things. So I think that is like a major piece of all of this with any monetization strategy, is making sure that there's kind of that broader understanding in the organization. And it's like both with leadership, because you need to help leadership understand, you know, when these tactics arise, what are we trading off? But also, you know, for all of the teams, you know, the other product managers in the organization, the engineers, the analysts, like everyone to really understand kind of what the plan is and how we want to test things together.
Yeah. I have one nasty question, because I have seen this go wrong so many times. I see that the problem with dependencies, and the way you explain it is kind of perfectly fine and it makes sense, but then you go to the details and there is a conflict in incentives or objectives, to be more precise.
Yes.
So just making this up, but travel company, I'm kind of in the description page of the hotel, trying to improve the conversion of the user by making it focus on the description and the click button to buy. And then you want me to add an app there and it will kill conversion. That's my thinking. Mm-hmm. And it's not on my goals. I mean, even from a time perspective, you are asking me to spend time in something that will not move my needle at all, in something that might potentially hurt it. So yeah, that's my rant, but, have you seen similar pattern mm-hmm. or any recommendation for people suffering that?
Yeah, I have seen that before. And I think, you know, when I started my role at Chegg, we didn't have a specific monetization function. And it was actually created, you know, partway through my time there. And almost for that exact reason, because when you have, you know, a product manager, you know, in your example, who's focusing on the hotel details page, they're not thinking about ads. They're not thinking about, you know, incremental revenue. They're thinking about, you know, conversion, and nor are they thinking about like the infrastructure that makes it easy for us to do things like put an ad on a page in a place that's not conspicuous. And so, you know, we decided to have a separate monetization team. You know, there were dependencies sometimes on teams having to do work, but there was the opportunity for us to do, experimentation ourselves on certain surfaces and certain places. And so one of the things that we did there was, you know, I mentioned that our writing product was one where we were putting that into our freemium offering, you know, based on a couple different factors, but one of them factors being that there's other high quality free alternatives. So it made sense for that to go within our free product. And we use that as a testing ground a lot of time to be able to prove out some of our hypotheses around like what is the impact to conversion if we have an ad. And so we were able to use other parts of our product to do some of the testing and give us some of the data to be able to go to the product manager, you know, in a different area and say, hey, here's the data that we've seen. When we put an ad up, here's an impact. Here's the impact to conversion. You know, it didn't kill it, but it decreased it by this much. But here's our revenue projection, and this is why, you know, the math makes sense. So, you know, I think having that data just makes for a lot less speculation and a lot, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of get over the hump. And we might be wrong. It might, you know, there might be a really big impact on that page. And so that's why we test it. And we are comfortable with saying like, hey, if this isn't the desired, you know, data that we want, like we should not do it. We should maintain, yeah, you know, the conversion rate. But if there's no impact to conversion rate, if we're doing no harm to the user experience, then this might be an opportunity to add in that additional monetization lever.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Okay, I think we are over time, and I think I have covered this a lot of ground. So I will throw my typical closing question, which is what's some learning about the strategy you have along this journey that we didn't cover so far?
I mean, we covered it briefly, but I think the one thing that I was thinking I would close on is that evangelization of strategy. So really thinking about how you're telling others what you are thinking about and want to work on. And so, what I talked about is that's important for dependencies. It's important for people, understanding why the monetization team is pushing what it's doing, but it's also, the more you talk about it, the more that other people can ask questions. They can also bring their previous experiences into it. For example, a monetization idea that we had at a firm was building a rewards program. And, there's people that would be like, hey, I built a rewards program at my last company. And then we would sit and chat through and understand all the mistakes that, they've previously made. And so, that type of communication, I think, is really important when it comes to strategy. It's not just about creating it and putting it in a document and filing it away. It's about making sure that you're explaining it and helping others understand, what it is that we're trying to test and build and do. And so you can have the best outcomes going forward.
That makes sense. So, and also helps with alignment and eventually with dependency. So there's so many benefits to taking this on. All right. This has been wonderful, Megan. Thanks so much for everything you shared with us today. Where can people find you and what can they do for you?
Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Megan Hughes on LinkedIn. And would love to connect with folks that would like to talk about monetization strategy. Always willing to, help out or advise on that front or answer any questions that I can. So, it's been really great. Love talking about this stuff. So
thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.